Show. Please join me in welcoming Lisa Belkin.
Wow. So none of you can figure it out either, huh? I think they keep inviting me to talk at things like this until I get it right, you know, until I have figured out my own life work equation. But we are learning more, and the women here, who I am now going to let introduce themselves, are making it work in their own way, because the world is changing, and women like this and women like this are part of the reason why. So take it away, Amanda.
Hi, everyone. I'm Amanda Steinberg. I'm the founder and CEO of DailyWorth.com, which I'm sure many of you have heard of. We are the leading digital media company for professional women, specifically around finance. And I am also, I launched DailyWorth about 5 years ago, the same week I gave birth to my second child. So I was doing it from the delivery room. And in that time frame, while raising two small kids, I've raised $4 million in venture capital, built a business in New York City while I lived in Philly, gotten divorced, moved twice. So I have a few opinions on how to make it all work. Whether or not, you know, I'm coming out the other side with my brain intact, we will see. But anyways.
And Mally, before I introduce Mally, we managed to spell her name wrong on the program. And the journalist in me, you know, whatever you do, spell their name right. So Mally's name is spelled right here, and it's R-O-N-C-A-L. And I'm sorry on behalf of everyone.
No worries, please. Hello? Oh, it's on. Okay. Just checking. Even though my husband will tell you. Who's right there? Hi, honey. Thank you. Sorry. That my voice is usually loud enough to be heard from, you know, Idaho. But anyway, okay, so hi, y'all. I am Mally Roncal. I am a celebrity makeup artist and creator of Mally Beauty Cosmetics. We will be 9 years old on QVC. We launched at QVC 9 years ago. And so honored and blessed to be the number one color brand there right now. And we have grown all because of the community that we have created of Malinistas, that we're very close. We have an amazing, amazing relationship, and I'm honored and blessed to be a part of that. I have, as you see, a husband who's a photographer, and three small girls, all girls under 6 years old, and we have a lot going on. But it is really, again, an amazing journey, and we do believe that we can make it all happen when you have great partners, great life. My husband was very excited to walk in here because he's like, wow, this is so amazing. And I said, yes, there's more vaginas in this room than you're even used to. Anyway, so we're going to have fun. Wow.
You. Mally, would you like to follow that?
Yeah.
No. All right, Mally can do it.
So first of all, I have to sit next to a makeup artist when I've had a total of 4 hours of sleep in 2 days. I'm sweating. So I'm Mally Watson. I am the Chief Operating Officer at Tierney, an advertising and public relations firm, a publicly traded advertising and public relations firm, one of the largest in the Mid-Atlantic. We do great work for clients like TD Bank and Pico Energy, Shire Pharmaceuticals, Independence, Blue Cross, to name a few. I had all three of my kids while I was building a career that I love. The career started for 10 years in New York, and then I came to Philadelphia and worked my butt off and had my first child. I have Jake, who's 15, who's here with me today. He told me I'm not supposed to embarrass him. My second daughter, Maggie, actually was born with a rare genetic disorder and a chromosome deletion, and she is profoundly handicapped mentally and physically and medically fragile. And then my 10-year-old, Sam, he has ADHD on a scale of 1 to 10, the 1 being like chasing butterflies in a baseball field. He's a 12. And so we have challenges related to behavioral issues and impulsivity and all of that. But everything I've learned about balance, and we'll talk about it, has actually come through my experience as a mom and, you know, some really big decisions, you know, that I've had to make along the way. And I'll try to give you something you can use today, but that's my story.
So, and you've alluded to some of them, but specifically, what in your life, what's your biggest challenge, the thing that you wish, you know, you could take away an answer from here?
Now, it is, other than sleep, which is really underrated, I have learned, and I struggle every day with when to say uncle or how to say no on both sides of the equation and being okay with no. And it's about setting boundaries, you know, and I've been divorced for 5 years, and, you know, you sort of recast when you're doing it on your own, although I was doing it on my own for a long time. But so how you say no at work and know that that's okay, and when you have to say no to family things. And every day it's a decision. And so for me, I think women inherently, we say yes. We're programmed to say yes. We're programmed to be, like, not to disappoint. And I have a lot of therapy working on it and the School of Hard Knocks. When you get to a point where, you know, I've been broken many times through the journeys, you know, with my children and my personal life. And I never wanted to say no and that I couldn't do something. And, you know, it's either, you know, say no or fall apart. And then you have these kids and you're like, okay, well, I got to stay together for them. So for me, it's figuring out how to say no and when it's okay. And if you try it out, you'd be surprised the support you get for it.
Mally, what's not perfect? What's your biggest conflict?
Oh, geez. What's not perfect? The list. Can we go there?
We only have an hour, but you
exactly,
can get started.
Thank you. I'm really good at making everything look like it's perfect, and then right, and then you go to the shower and cry alone for a few hours. You know, right? I know you've been there. I know. You know what it is? You again. I love that learning how to say no, because we don't do that. But you have what I found in the balance is, and this doesn't necessarily work for everyone. Like we all work. I don't know one person who's like straight up 9 to 5 and then never again, right? It's like midnight and then 5 in the morning and then sometimes on weekends. But you have to make rules, right? That's my one thing. We have, you know, work, you know, selling on a QVC channel, which is literally 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. You have to learn to kind of roll with the punches. You know, you have to learn how to be a little bit flexible. And, but at the same time, you have to make rules. Like, we do have family rules in the sense that for, you know, as a celebrity makeup artist, I was very, very used to missing every single, you know, Thanksgiving, missing every single family get together because I was always out doing, you know, somebody's makeup for the Super Bowl or whatever. But when you have children, all of a sudden you realize that you cannot always do what's best for your career. You have to follow your heart. So like in our house, the general rule is from 5 to 8, you cannot talk to me. I will be there for you from the first thing in the morning, anything that anybody needs, all the way to 5 p.m. At 5 p.m., it's dinner and it's bath. And it's reading, and it's putting everyone to bed. At 8:01, you can fucking take over my life, okay? Until whatever time you need. But from those 3 hours, that belongs to my family, and that's what you have to do. Of course, there's always, you know, exceptions. But if you can keep that, and you can hold that in your heart, and you can say, you know what, I do that for my kids, and they will appreciate that, and your husband or your partners will appreciate that, then that's all that you can do, you know. And then you have to learn to say, you have to be a little forgiving, you know, to yourself. Mm-hmm. To just say, you know what, I've done the best I can, and I do make these rules for my family.
Amanda?
So about 3 years ago when I got divorced, I had an incredible opportunity to basically design my life exactly the way I wanted it to be, which means it actually looks pretty unconventional and like no one else's, but it's actually working unbelievably well. I'm not going to tell you that I don't have massive breakdowns. I'm not going to tell you that I wasn't in our office last Monday morning in tears because I cracked. You know, it was just kind of that once a year. I actually sent a whole email to our entire team. Don't worry that my eyes are bloodshot. This is what leadership looks like sometimes. I'm going to be okay. Everything's moving on. But what I have been able to do, I like saying, especially in a room like this, I mean, you guys are here to get the real scoop. That's what I want to tell you is what I really think about my life being CEO of a multi-million dollar company with two tiny children in multiple cities is you really have to get creative about how it is you're structuring things. And what I've been able to do that I know is working is, you know, the fact that I have joint custody of my children. I know this is really probably controversial to say, but it gives me those 2-3 nights a week where I really have to work late. I don't know if I could do what I do if I didn't have that. I am not apologetic about having amazing childcare for my children. I go to the ends of the earth to find it because I know when I have left my kids with childcare, I'm not thrilled about. It's horrible. And when I come home and my kids are happy with their childcare, they don't want the childcare to leave because they want them to stay and keep playing with them. So it's really about not necessarily caring about how you're perceived by the outside world, not necessarily thinking that it has to be a certain way, that you have to be at every, I miss so much of my kids' school stuff, which is hard sometimes, but really kind of getting radical and out of the box, because as we know, women breadwinners on the rise within the next 15 years, women are going to be equally earning to men. So we are the ones now that have to shake things up and question everything about what time we get in the morning to what time our workday ends. And that's a lot of what I'm thinking about and trying to create through our company and through my own life.
So we're at a really interesting moment right now where there is a remarkable amount and depth and quality of conversation on this subject. And, you know, you have your two, in a way, pillars of what we're all talking about. So on the one hand, we have Sheryl Sandberg, who says, you know, look at your own contribution to why women aren't getting where women need to get. And don't lean out before, you know, don't leave before you leave. And on the other hand, and so Sheryl paints it as a very personal decision, something that you can take control of. And Anne-Marie Slaughter, on the other hand, is looking at the workplace and saying, wait, work is not designed in a way that you can do both these things, that you can reach the work stratosphere and have the kind of family life that you want. For her, it's very sort of organizational. And while this sounds like a theoretical conversation, it's one that affects the life of every single, frankly, worker, but particularly women who work. So is Sheryl right? Is this something that women need to fix on their own? Is Anne-Marie right? Is this something that requires an overhaul and redesign of the way we work? Where's the responsibility lie here?
It's not black and white, and it is, you know, what I took from Sheryl is that back to not feeling guilty, you know, it's okay to have a seat at the table. I mean, even in my own career, as I started to move up, feeling intimidated that I was young and a female and to sit at the table with the old guys and having people say to me, go up there, go. I've literally been pushed before physically to do that and to not be apologetic for anything, how you think, how you feel. But at the same instance, we were talking about this, I worked really, really hard for 10 years to get that. So I think that we have a responsibility as leaders to encourage women and even young men that, you know, to feel comfortable with having a seat at the table and to raise their hand and to, instead of, you know, just say, I have to do this, period, I'm sorry, just this is where I'm going. I think we're slaughtered here. I mean, that's a huge, huge issue. Do I think we have a problem in this country with childcare and how we treat our childcare, how we don't pay them, all of that? Absolutely. I mean, that's a Titanic that we've got to turn across the country to help structure things. But for me, it's going back to the definition of having it all. And every single person in this room has a different definition of that. And for me, now having it all is loving my job and also knowing that I've got a meaningful relationship with my children. And it's different than yours and than everybody else's. And so for me, it's, you got to get to that first. Like, what does all mean to you? and not to your mother, not to your father. You should see my father's expectation. It's just,
why didn't you become a doctor, honey?
Anyway, so that's kind of where I sit.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's the first thing that I, when y'all asked me to come and talk about this, the first thing I thought was, this is such a personal question. Because everyone is different. You know, everybody has to decide for themselves what is the best way to get through the day, right? To get what you need to get done. I mean, as an employer, as a president, my view on that is, look, I don't care when you get your work done. I mean, if we have deadlines, we have deadlines. But I don't care when it gets done, as long as it gets done, that you're enjoying it, that you're putting your heart in it, you're putting your soul into it, and that it gets on my desk when it's supposed to get there. So if that means that you need to go and take your kid to her ballet recital, or you need to go to the doctor and be there, and you have to do it during work hours, then do it. Because that, to me, that's all that matters. Because if I'm keeping you chained to a desk and saying that this is the time I need you to be here for me, this is my time, then guess what? You're going to hate me, you're going to be miserable, and you're not going to give me your best. So my view on it is always this. As long as you can succeed with your soul and believe that you're giving me the best that you can give me, I don't care when you do it. And if you're doing it in, you can't do it during a meeting, you know, when I need you standing there. But if it's a time when we discuss it and we have a really open and honest, relationship, then you know what? Then do it. Because then you're going to give us all that we want from you, which is your best, and that you love your job. So, you know what I mean? For me, again, at the end of the day, if I could, we're talking about redesigning the world. I wish that we could all sort of make up our own schedule. Like we could, like at the beginning of the year, I know this could never happen, but like just say, here's a list of everything I need for you for 365 days. And then you just did it. I mean, to me, that would be a perfect world.
Wait, aren't you the boss? Can't you decide?
Yeah, well, sort of. But I have much higher people to answer to.
So I actually think the responsibility does lie with the bosses, of which I am one and of which we all are. And we are the ones that, it's funny though, there have been many times, Kelly is here, she knows, I'm trying to tell our staff to go home at like 4 o'clock, especially, if just on a Friday. And they actually resist me. Yes. And there's like this cultural resistance too. Or they just say, we have a lot of work to do, which you actually do. But it's weird being the one, the boss, who's like, how about we try more flexibility? Everyone's like, oh no, then we're not working hard enough. And, but for us as bosses, we have to kind of, isn't that weird? I'm telling staff to go home and they like, totally ignore me.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important for us to push the boundaries because, our employees are afraid. They don't want to seem like they're less dedicated. Right. They don't want to seem like they're pushing any sort of envelope. So it's up to us.
Well, that's part of it, that's leading, right, by example, mm-hmm. and walking that talk and that message. And I think that you've got to, that breeds trust and that breeds creativity and that breeds loyalty and all of those things. But it's tough.
One of my favorite Hillary Clinton stories, did all of you know that she's going to be here later? is that she used to leave her job, she used to leave the State Department at 5 or 6 o'clock every day so that gave permission to everyone else to leave at 5 or 6 o'clock every day. Now, she also then went home and probably worked for 12 more hours, but you do have to set the tone. You do have to make it clear that you're not just saying it, but you really mean it. And that's a tough one.
You mentioned permission, and that's another thing that women seek. And I think as leaders, let me just say right out, I don't do it all. I got an amazing babysitter. I got a great assistant. I have friends. I have an incredible team. But that we have to give them permission to say uncle, and for us to say, you talk about, morning I fell apart. Thank God my boss and my son's hugging me in the elevator on the way over here. But you have to be able to say, don't do it all. And I'm okay with my kid not getting a home cooked meal from me, and he walks out the door with no underpants on in the morning. I don't care. not this one.
Okay. We'll talk about the sharing too much. That'll be another panel. Yeah.
But my point is, for us as female leaders to share, teens what we struggle with and the humanity, because that's where compassion is bred. And so, again, I think all of us are sort of like out there. But, you know, so this illusion that we do it all is just, you know, it's BS. But and you cannot do it alone.
Right.
Okay, so let's talk. Let's switch tax a little and talk about technology. I see we have three cell phones out on. Okay, two cell phones out. It's the double-edged sword. So this is the device that allows you to work all the time, and this is also the device that then feels like you have to work all the time. So how do you handle this thing over here?
I have a total phone addiction, and I think I should probably be sent away for a while. It's not even.
I wonder if there are programs. There are probably programs at this point.
For eye drops, for getting contact lenses the other week, and I couldn't look at my phone for 2 hours, and I literally started convulsing. I realized, wow, this is something I need to look at. So I don't have any advice for you in this category.
Okay, don't listen to Amanda.
No advice here.
Okay, I have two phones. That's how addicted I am. But I will say, when we say, is it a blessing or a curse? I believe it is a blessing. And only just because it allows you to be in control of what you need to be in control of for that moment. That said, you have to take charge of your addiction. So, like, for example, my daughters are getting very, very smart now. Like, they thought that I was, you know, playing Tetris. Now they know that when I'm using it, sitting in front of them, that I'm working. And they will say to me at some point, you know, if we're supposed, you know, and it's just a quick email, honey, it's just quick, I won't, you know, whatever. They're like, stop working for 1 minute because you're sitting with me. And it just rips your heart open because you're like, that's what they're remembering. In the same breath, they're also seeing that mommy is a strong woman who is, you know, very in charge of her life as much as, you know, she can be, and that she is breeding lots of great, strong women as well, which is another one of the things that I am very passionate about, is finding young talent and infusing them with so much positivity that they can go out there and take over the world as well. But and make it sort of normal for them. Like one time I remember I was sitting in my daughter's, you know, preschool class, or it was kindergarten, or one of those things, I don't remember. And one of my daughters turned and sat to her friend, and she looked at her and she said, so what channel is your mom on? And, you know, it was, like, funny to me, because I thought, you know what, I'm mommy to her. Like, it's not that I have this amazing, great job. I'm literally infusing in her at this young age that this is normal, you know, that this is what we need to do, is work hard and have a family and you know, conquer the world. So I think that's the thing. You do have to take it and throw it, you know, in the bucket. Sometimes when you come home, have a little, you know, basket at the table and say, you know what, honey, this is it, the whole family. And look, my girls have iPads too. Same thing, right? To say, like, none of this. Let's just connect. So you take it away, and then again, you give yourself a little alarm.
We call that technology timeout in my house, and it can be a punishment, but back to my original comment, it's a little active. And they do it to me. They take my phone away for the very same reason. But for me, my kids are a little bit older, and that technology allows me to stay connected to them and all the people that keep them happy and healthy. So on any given day, I will trade emails with my son's teachers, with my son, with my kid's dad, with doctors, you know, all of that. And then I have them all on the email chain. So the nanny gets the email from my 10-year-old school to understand what kind of day he had. We all see it. We know how he's going to walk off the bus. But I do, they notice when you're on. And I've been screamed at, get off the, once a young child who shall go nameless told me to get the F off the phone. And but it's true. So, you know, just the other day, I made it to a half of Jake's football game, and I purposefully am in the bleachers, kept my phone in my purse, because you know what? I was one of 100 people. He knew where I was, and he said to me, I noticed you didn't check your phone during my game. So it's another thing you have to say no to, and sometimes at night, I put it there, and I won't check it at 11 o'clock because I'm asleep.
So who sleeps with the phone next to their bed? Raise of hands. How about out there? Raise of hands. Yeah. Okay. Who checks it first thing when you wake up in the morning?
2 o'clock in the morning sometimes.
Two in the morning. Yeah, that wasn't even what I had in mind, but okay.
That's when you get up on the
So as employers, and some of you alluded to this, but specifically, what must you do to practice what you preach? What is your obligation to help those who are not in charge? Because frankly, the life-work equation is easiest when you're in charge. I know all of you cry a lot, but you know, you're the ones who have
it
easier.
Because my son lost my car keys, and my whole day was perfectly lined up, but I had been telling him he had to clean up more. So he took my keys and put them in the back of the art closet, and I missed like 2 meetings. So that was, yeah.
The back of the art closet. That's where the keys go.
But he did what he was supposed to do. So anyhow. Yeah, I mean, first we have to figure out what it is that we care about and the responsibility that we're setting. So on the one hand, I want to give our team as much flexibility as possible. I want all the moms to be able to drop their kids off at school that morning. I want them to be able to leave a couple times a week and be able to pick up their kids before the sun goes down. But then on the other side, it means that I need them to be available. And so I'm not saying this is the right solution. I'm just saying this is where the thought process is right now. So, of course, fortunately, because we are a company run by moms, that weekends are pretty chill. We don't have a lot going on. But there is still, I don't hesitate to send an email like at 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning, or maybe I should. But I feel like this is the tension now, is if we're going to create all this flexibility and all this stuff, then you have to be available on your phone. And then so the question is, what kind of responsiveness are you looking for? Is this whole system workable? You know, all of that.
Again, we have a very, you know, sort of strict, you know, at least my assistant who's over there always, we have a little bit of a crazy schedule in the sense that we have, sometimes we have shows on weekends, or sometimes we're flying to the UK doing QVC shows there, and sometimes we have Ulta events and they're at night. So it's not a very, you know, normal quote-unquote business schedule. That said, I, again, being very passionate about being the one who's, you know, there for my kids, will say, you know what, we are not working on this day. Or you worked too hard, not too hard, you worked a lot this week. So you know what, take Wednesday from this time. Like, I will sit with my girls in the office and look at the calendar and see where I can give them some time back. Because, you know, again, working as a freelance makeup artist for so many years, and literally never saying no. Because the minute you say no in a freelance world, then somebody's right in and they're going to take it. And sorry, that's it. You could be done with it. So I literally worked for like 15 years on the road and like never said no. But also realized what that did for my brain and my body and my life. So I'm very, very passionate about making sure that my team gets time. So yes, I'm a forcer. I will call them on a Wednesday night and say, you know what, I was just looking at the calendar. Don't come in tomorrow. We'll make it work. You know, we'll do something. And I'll do it too. I'll be like, you know what, I'm taking the afternoon off. I'm going Party City with my kids so we can buy Halloween costumes. So, you know what I mean? But let's just make sure that we're connected. And again, that's where, unfortunately, this becomes your best friend, because then at least everyone's connected and everyone knows what's going on.
I mean, I think, like I said before, we've got to share what we've learned and some tactics. They don't always work. But at the highest level, it's about communication and setting expectations and staying really connected to your team. We stay connected to our families, and how do you stay connected to your team personally so that they feel like you have their back, and then showing up. The ability to say, you go home, I will do this, even if you're working down. I mean, that's what's great about our organization. We're 70% female. Our entire C-suite is working moms who had their kids and raised them. So we believe in collaboration and sharing that load. And so the ability as a leader to say, okay, this may be something that I normally don't do, but I'm sending you home and I will handle it. And know when you need to say that to somebody else. And say, and so it's this sacrifice that's important, and this collaboration. But to stay close to what's going on, at least I found, is really critical. And to really be open to the suggestions and to try and create an environment where someone will come in and say, you think, what would you guys think if we did that? And there are constructs. I mean, we're part of a publicly traded company. We don't have as much flexibility maybe as you guys in these great entrepreneurial companies. But for us, and for me, it's about the receptivity to it and knowing that your team, they have their back because they have yours. So
let's talk about men and women. Is this still more of a problem for women, and or is that overly simplistic, and are we ignoring the fact that men have been struggling with their own version of this and we've sort of claimed it as our own?
I have a close friend whose husband is one of the top chefs in Philadelphia, and he works probably 80, 90-hour weeks, and she takes on all childcare responsibilities and also has a business of her own. And it's just interesting to me that it is okay that he has gone 80 hours a week and she still has earning responsibilities and full childcare. And I'm looking for it. The fact that there are no examples in the reverse, I still think there's just, it's okay for men to work as hard as they need to work to be successful, and it's not okay for women to work as hard as they need to work in order to have the same amounts of success. So I think there's still an extraordinary gender bias that we need to push through.
You're both nodding.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I also, though, am starting to see a lot more of that sort of, you know, all my little baby cousins who are not babies, but they're all getting married and having kids now. And it is really refreshing, though, to see how so many young men now really do want to take a strong role in raising their kids and taking time, away from work and become a part of that. I mean, I am blessed enough to have a husband who does. We are truly a 50-50 partnership in the sense that when he can't do it, I'm there. And when I can't do it, he's there. And when we're both here, the babysitter's there. So it's all good. But you know what I mean? It's tough. Generally speaking, yes, I agree with you 1,000%. But I will say on a positive, just personally, I'm seeing a lot more that men are trying to become a big part of the family unit and, you know, making it a lot more 50-50 for families and carrying the same burden.
I think that I agree that it's got to change generationally. But as leaders, you know, I say we have a 70% female base, but we have some really amazing guys and parents that work for us. And what I think about and we discuss as a leadership a lot of times is to make sure we have them in the equation when we're talking about this and encouraging them in the same way. I mean, I think paternity leave is an incredible thing and that men take advantage of it. They shouldn't be apologetic. I also am starting to see, I mean, Pew released a survey that said 30% of newlywed couples, the wife is now the major breadwinner, and that trend is up from 24%. And you're right,
it's at 40%. It's going to become equal in the next 15 years.
And so there's, and the real truth is, and this is what I have a problem when I get up or you go listen to maybe Sheryl Sandberg and say, well, can everybody, you know, afford the child care and the resources and all of that? So the real truth is somebody's got to probably take a laboring oar. And I think it's harder for men of our generation. I'm seeing it blossom. I mean, we have some incredible women who have amazing husbands who are the stay-at-home dads. And we bow and they're fine with it. And, you know, several of my very good friends who run companies, they're all the major breadwinners. But I think that's a societal change that's, again, got to happen organically through the men that we raise. So for me to have two sons, to teach them that it's okay to have a working mom and to be understand, I mean, that's why I talk to them about what I do. Because you've got to, it's just like, what was it, 20 years ago we wanted to teach men to cry. Well, we got to evolve. So it has to change, and that's just going to be cultural and societal.
But it doesn't all have to be organic. So what do you think of the role of policy in all of this? To put you on the spot, what's the maternity leave policy at your particular companies, paid or unpaid?
It is paid.
How long?
At least 8 weeks. Depending on C-section or birth, and I could be wrong. I'm looking at my birthing mothers over there. Yeah, And then, you know, we have actually a very healthy PTO, whatever, arrangement. So a lot of people tack those days on. You know, we work with each individual to kind of figure out how they come back and when they come back and what that looks like. And so we're lucky we may be publicly treated, but there's only 115 of us, so we try to fill
it. What is it? There are four countries in the world that don't have paid maternity leave as law. Do you know who the four are? Lesotho, Swaziland, I'm now forgetting, and us.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Can I go next? Yeah. So we actually have our first Daily Worth baby.
She's
so cute, Lola. She's like 3 days old. And our head of sales gets a 6-week paid maternity leave. And when we previously wrote a post about this to Daily Worth's close to a million subscribers now, we actually said, you know, so we're a startup that empowers women. What should our maternity leave? And much to my shock, there were hundreds of comments from women who were saying, actually, you don't necessarily have to give maternity leave. This, if a woman has a baby, and these are women saying mm-hmm. this, if a woman has a baby, it's her own choice, and she should have to manage the consequences of that.
No, it's...
You guys can all go sort of like Daily Worth maternity leave or whatever to read the comments that came in from around the country. So
we get that
cultural
too.
Resistance to...
We get that in the comments too.
And then there were the other ones where in a startup, like, you know, startups are so fragile economically that, you know, paying someone's salary while they're out is really hard, but we're obviously doing it anyway. So I agree with you. As employers, we need to think these things through. But there's all these cultural messages that are still wrapped around us that don't even support them as much as the leaders want to push them through.
Let me just say, though, too, in a corporation where it's structured, right, and you can only, you know, adhere to so much leave, you have to respect the leave. And we, on the inside, we tell, go check out. And we say to the staff, don't you dare copy them on the emails and don't call us. And we are going to try like hell not to bring you in. And we are really religious about that because we know we're programmed, right? And I give the baby a bottle and everybody, you know. And so we tell our parents, put the phone away. And it's on us, though, not to suck them back in. And I don't, you know, I'm proud to say that we do that pretty well. But you
got to
respect the leave.
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, when you have a baby, you got a baby. I mean, that's the priority, no matter what. And again, that's you tell them to do it, and we try to do it, but you tell them. That that happens once in a lifetime, honey. You better respect that moment. You know, I have to say that, you know, not to get all, like, emotional, but truthfully, that's a very important time of your life. You know, I lost my mom when I was 17 years old to breast cancer. And, you know, I'll tell you, she was diagnosed when I was 2. They gave her 6 months to live, and she lived for 15 years. And I got to tell you, those 15 years, she was like this with me. Like, we did not miss a moment. So when it comes to, you know, your child, man, to me, that's like, at a certain point, you have to respect that. That is your, you know, that's a gift from God. But on other than that, I think, too, it's also about training the team so that when you lose someone, right, to maternity leave, that you can do it and you can do it and you can do it. We learned that the hard way when we first started Bally Beauty, and it was literally me and my husband and my assistant, and she, like, did everything. Right, and then one day, you know, she got the flu, and she was gone. And Phil and I were like, "Well, how do you do that? I don't know how to do that, do you?" And we learned that you need to have a great support system within your team, so that not everyone just knows how to do one thing, and nobody else knows how to do everything else. That has to be something that can help in the end. That everyone can help each other out when they do something as beautiful as have a child.
So I'm going to open for questions in a minute, but let's one last question from me for all of you. If you could leave the audience with one thing, one tip, one question to think about, one, you know, hint from your own life, what would it be?
I guess I'm just going to start by repeating the fact that women are becoming equal to men as the breadwinners, and we're going to inherit about 2/3 of this nation's wealth. So in, within the next 15, 20 years, so it actually is up to us. So I challenge all of us to have these conversations over dinner with friends, is to say, how do we want our worlds to change? How do we want our work structures to change? How do we want to have relationships with our children? Because, you know, this opportunity could pass us by and we could continue to think that we're not in control. But the truth is that we are. So it's up to us to figure it out.
I agree with that 1,000%. Again, having, you know, three daughters and looking at them and saying, how do I want your life to be? How do I want you to feel when you are an adult and you're making your choices? Is we need to work together now, have all of our wish lists, have all, I'm a dreamer, like to the point of where it's kind of crazy, but dream of it, make the most insane life that you could create for yourself. Write it down and make it a reality. Look at it and see how we can do it. And then we all need to come together and find a way to make it happen. We make miracles happen every day. Hello, we're women. So we can make it happen over time, but we need to work together.
For me, the tip, you know, if you could walk away with one thing, is to be comfortable with knowing that you can't do it alone. And to, I say to the team all the time, we're going to eat this elephant in small chunks. And I learned that from many, many nights in the ICU with my daughter, thinking about, is she going to live? What's she going to do? Is she going to go to college? Is she? And so it's the fine art of compartmentalization, which is a really great strategy. And to put it in a box, I teach my kids and you and my little guy, we have a worry box. And so to know who you have to lean on, and don't be afraid to ask. To take the problems one at a time. You know, I lived in a moment where I would just say, okay, I'm just going to get to tomorrow, and I'm just going to get to there. And to teach those people that we work with to rein in that worry and that pressure and compromise. Like I said, who needs underwear every day? That's what it is. And I think the other thing we don't do as women, and even more as like really, really busy people, we don't take care of ourselves. And care means different things. You know, for me, it's maybe trying to run so that I don't kill somebody. For somebody else, it's going to church or reading a book or a cup of coffee or, you know, or strolling through TJ Maxx to find the best pair of shoes that you ever did find for cheap. But so you had to, I guess a little more self-reflection, but sorry, Lisa. So it's those things. But no, can everybody work out 3 hours a day? No, but don't be afraid to take a moment for yourself. If that means shutting your door in your office so that you can look at Zappos, I do not do that. Not do that. But I mean it. It's a moment.
Yeah.
And we don't. We say yes, we're guilty, we take care of everybody else. And that's not new, right? Oprah's been telling this forever, but so...
All right, questions. We have some mics in the middle. Don't be shy about using them.
Thanks. I don't have a question as much as I have a revelation that I came upon recently, which is not just about learning how to say no, but it's also we have to learn how to not say yes. Because learning how to say no means you actually have to say no to somebody when they ask you. Learning how to not say yes is when you see a fundraising thing going on in your community, or you see that somebody on Facebook is rallying support for something, and you're like, oh, that's such a good cause. I should, you know, step into that. So it's not just about, that's what I found. And I found that when I stopped saying yes all the time and volunteering, like I have a t-shirt that says, stop me before I volunteer again. And a friend gave that to me as a gift, and it was the greatest gift
that
I ever got.
What? That was an intervention when they gave you that.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So for me, I've learned it's not just about learning how to say no, it's about learning how to not say yes, because we all, most women, feel that need to help and to nurture and to care and telling yourself it's okay not to say yes. And that's the hardest part.
That's great. Yeah.
That's the hardest part. So I just wanted to share that.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Caitlin Radigan, and I just wanted to thank all four of you for being here today. I think this is a really powerful and inspiring lecture series. I just think this has been really great. My question is, I was wondering if any of you three ladies could give advice or speak to millennial women, us Gen Y women, who are now in the workforce, and we've had a few very interesting things to deal with that maybe you didn't have to deal with in this country. For example, being connected all the time, we grew up with that. You know, it's kind of been ingrained in us. It's like breathing Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, which are now very marketable job skills. But we went from that was our personal lives, right, to now, you know, we kind of grew up with that expectation. So kind of turning that off is really hard for us now that it's getting morphed with our work life as well. And then secondly, in terms of saying no, and I'm not, you know, going to say I'm a voice for all Gen Y women in this country, obviously, but a lot of us can't afford to say no. If somebody's offering us a paid opportunity and we just keep adding on and on, you know, I just am afraid that so many of us are going to get burnt out. But we know we live in this economy where a lot of us can't afford to say no, especially with college debt. So I was just wondering if you could speak to any advice for millennial women, especially with work-life balance, and how we are to do that with these kind of constraints.
Let me address the no, because I absolutely understand what you mean by that. And my intention behind no was, and it's you have to assess the risk with the no, right? And so if you're saying you need to say yes because you're advancing your career and you guys are under incredible financial pressure, more so than even we were when we got out of school 1,000 years ago. But but maybe that no is that you are not gonna, you know, volunteer or do this or just totally be focused on your career. It is very hard. I worry about over commenting about the working moms, because what about everybody else that needs to leave at 5? Because maybe they want to go to yoga, but they don't have a kid and they feel bad because that's not a legitimate excuse. And so as leaders, we have to stay mindful of that, and we have to encourage that regardless of whether or not you have kids. And so no is it's not easy. And so you've got to make that decision. But you also hopefully have the ability to either through mentors or through your supervisors to have these kind of open discussions to say, can you help me figure this out? Or, you know, I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah, that's very, I have a lot of young girls working with me, and I see it as a blessing and an honor, because again, we are creating, you know, amazing leaders, and the whole like Facebook, Twitter, honey, that's your life, girl. You better just enjoy it and just suck it up and do what you got to do. I mean, look, I sit with my assistant on Match.com sometimes trying to find her a date. She's single, by the way, if there are any, you know. But you know what I mean? Because, and that's part of it, right? Yeah. Like, just you know, because it is. It's hard. Like, I mean, to try and live in this world and be 20-something and want to be, you know, a leader yourself, you do. You just have to decide, make choices, consult your bosses, your leaders, your mom, your dad, and you know what? That's all you can do is embrace the world you live in, love it, and just keep on fighting. You know, this is really what it's all about, and you'll always end up, if you're honest with yourself, exactly what you want to do.
My advice actually is what's always worked for me is that I had a skill of computer programming, which always, I had a lucrative skill that I knew I could always find a lot of work in. And I don't know what some of those other ones are, but especially in terms of flexibility, I've been blessed in that I've never had earning stress or career stress because I positioned myself, I just picked up computer programming my senior year of college. So I would ask for you, you know, there's some skills that can that generate $15 an hour. There's some skills that generate $25 an hour. There's some skills that generate $100 an hour, $200 an hour. So because things are so unstable being millennial these days and things just don't look what they used to, I would say try and figure out what it is you can teach yourself that's going to not only give you income but also the flexibility you need.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Hi, my name's Kimberly. First, hello to Mally. I think you're fabulous, and your mascara is magical.
Yay!
It's awesome.
Thank you.
So I'm 23. I'm just 2 years deep into my career. So my question is kind of a piggyback off of that one. If you guys could go travel back in time to this point in the career that I'm in and tell yourself one thing about work-life balance, since it's not really a struggle that I have right now currently, you know, are there good habits that I can start forming now and be a little bit more proactive about, you know, my time and my future when I might have a family and might have these struggles?
For me, the advice is stop striving to be normal, especially if you know you're not normal. So, you know, I was in a rush when I was 23 to get married, have kids, and like put the life together that I was supposed to. And that was actually what created the meltdown that ultimately inspired me to start my business, because I'd built this life that was so expensive that looked like what I was supposed to have. So don't be in a rush to put any sort of pieces together. Just go with what's in front of you and what makes sense, because trying to manufacture what looks typical doesn't even necessarily work anymore. So don't be in a rush. Just go with your own flow.
The other thing I learned is how much more efficient you can be when you have to leave at 5 o'clock or at 6 or 6:30. And so after I had my first child, you know, I realized you can really move a lot of stuff through in like 9 hours. And when you don't have that, you tend to, I don't know, it's like, I don't think you waste time, but you just don't maximize your time. So I would ask that you think about, like, how can I do this faster, or how can I move this along? Or, yeah, I don't go out to lunch. I eat at my desk. I'm fine with that. Probably everybody does. But I was fascinated because I was like, oh. So play around with the amount of time you actually spend in the office and start to think about, if I only had this much time to do it, how can I do it? And, you know, you can learn through leaders and mentors and how to, there are sometimes you can take shortcuts and not sacrifice the quality of the work. So you learn that when you've got like a time clock beating on your back, right? But so play around with that. You should be amazed how much more you can get done. I mean, women, God, we can do so much. And in fact, we do better when you just like pile more and more crap, you know? So think about that. You know, may work in some scenarios with your friends where you guys make a pact, like, okay, we're going to leave at 6. Let's play around with this. And how much more can I get done in 8 hours that I didn't think? Or, you know, how you maximize time.
Well, I'm so happy for you that you are so young and you're standing here. That's amazing,
you know.
Because you are taking charge of your life. And when it comes to your career and what you're going to build for your future and your legacy and who you're going to be for your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, all I would ask you to do is love what you do and live what you do. And let whatever your job is for your life, let it be your dream. You know, I mean, it's so, you know, cliche to say, like, what is it? It's like if you're doing what you love, you're not working. Is that what it is? All right, okay.
We get
something like that. Do that! Okay? Do that. So.
Cool, thank you.
Okay. Yep. Can I have your personality and your eyelashes?
Yes. I'm looking at the eyelashes, yes, absolutely. Both. Which I actually glued on as we were driving here.
If I glued on eyelashes while I was driving here, I would be her like this. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Karen Saporito. I'm a psychologist, and I've worked my entire, as an adult, I took time off and worked part-time for a while when I had kids. I did go through a divorce 5 years ago. My ex-husband we have joint custody, but he doesn't do as much. And the expectations are not, he doesn't have that assumption that he should carry that. And so what I wanted to know if you could speak to is the balance of, or the struggle that I have to balance being a working single mom and being able to say no to my children for driving them home from something, having to ask multiple women or men multiple times to drive my kid home, or not being at a game. And sometimes, I mean, I also make less money because I shorten my day so that I can be there to pick them up unexpectedly. Oh, practice is over at 3:45. So I just I wanted to know if you could speak to the single working moms and finding that balance, because I also have that, I really want to work more and develop. I'm at a crossroads right now, so I really want to be able to dedicate the time to my career. But again, I don't have the time to take away from my kids, and I cannot work after like 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Like my brain shuts down and I'm done.
Well, I think that, you know, Amanda said it's for, you know, who's your child care and what's your support backup?
Well, my kids are 15 yeah. and 12.
Right.
Boys, both ADHD, both involved in sports, sometimes more than one at a time, which I understand is me not saying no, but...
No, you know, I understand that, but it's again, it's my experiences, you know, my have the babysitter drive my kids around, and she attends the games, and she takes my ADHD son to his therapy every Monday, and all of that. I think that it is, you know, again, you've got to decide what you're comfortable with and what your kids are comfortable with, and set those expectations and lean on the others. I do find at school, like the elementary school, I try to gravitate, I don't know why, to a couple of other working moms, and so we'll call each other and bail each other out, and you sort of pay it forward on either side, which really helps.
Huge.
And then there every now and then the non-working mom who just wants to help. And I learned, it was so hard to learn to make the call and ask, and then to force them to ask me back for the help. So it's that.
But I think what's coming up here is that not every mom can afford the same amount of childcare
right,
that you
right.
and I can afford. So I think, but I think also, I mean, what you're talking about is just kind of still the cultural expectation that the ex-husband doesn't have to take on the equal amount of responsibility and what you were left with the amount of salary that you have. So what I ask of you, and this is hard because, and please don't tweet any of this stuff, because, but so what I want you to do is write down what you think your life should look like if things were equal, so that you really have it crystallized on paper. And then you have to engage with your ex in a way that is speaking up for your own equality, because it's really just gender bias at this point, and you are entitled to not have to shoulder all of that burden as well as carry a career and always be expected to be there. But no one's going to do that for you.
Absolutely. I just want to also note that my mother's in the back row. She's a civil rights attorney, so I grew up with the expectations that I could do anything I wanted. Cool. Everything should be equal, and if it's not, I should speak up and do something about it. So I completely agree with you. It's just not always feasible ask for or get the help, because there's, you know, I have, and it's, this is not my personal therapy session, but I just think the idea that...
It is mine, actually.
But yeah, I mean, that idea, I think I really have always been very career oriented and feel bad saying no to my kids, and always had the expectations I should be able to do whatever I want. So that, I think that saying no on both sides is just really hard.
It is.
So I'm getting the we need to wrap up signals. And so I'm going to, as the moderator, seize the floor for 1 second and sum up both what you're asking and what I've sort of been thinking about as we've been hearing all of these questions. The one thing I have learned recently as I've sent two kids off into the world, so now I'm at a next chapter, is we tend to see every day, every breakdown, every moment, every conundrum as, oh my God, this is forever. I need to figure out my whole trajectory and my whole career at 23. I need to solve my life-work balance because I need to get ahead in my career. Well, my kids are 15 and 12. No, what we have to do is figure out what the map should look like now and into the foreseeable future, and with a sense of where we want to go. But the reality of the new workplace is you have no idea what the whole of it is going to look like career-wise. You also have no idea what the personal factors in your equation are going to be. So we're making ourselves a little crazy sometimes trying to say, I am going to do all of it. I am going to fix all of it. Right now, really what you need to do is figure out how to deal with your day with your kids at 15 and 12 and your job as it is now. They're going to be gone in an eye blink. And then you're not going to have to go pick them up at 3:45. And then you've got a whole other chapter and a much longer life than we used to have. And so for me, that was the revelation, was that I could let some of these things that I was carrying around as huge weights go because I couldn't do anything about them right now. So I might as well not be weighed down by them right now. And